June Chapman is chief executive of Citizens Advice St Albans District. We've all heard of Citizens Advice. Many of us have popped into a bureau or gone online to find information. It started a long time ago.
1939, yeah, with the outbreak of war. Lots of local groups of volunteers had found ways to work the levers of bureaucracy, because whenever there's a civil emergency of any sort, people need to be able to get passes and chits and vouchers and ration books. And having done that for themselves, they thought that it would be useful to do it for their nearest and dearest and neighbours, and so set themselves up in school halls and churches and other local community buildings. Initially, they had the information on index cards and paper files, and then it got some funding to get organised, and I think at the high point there were 700 or 800 different charities. And we're very proud of the fact that it is a bottom-up organisation rather than anybody's manifesto pledge, because it's very much one of our principles that we like to empower other members of the community. So we don't think of ourselves as experts. We have a certain amount of training, quite a lot these days, but what we primarily want to do is to get alongside someone and help them to explore the full extent of the difficulties that they're experiencing, and then find ways with them to try and to resolve some of those issues and make things better for them. So we like to get people to do things as far as they're able for themselves, rather than taking over their life, which we find leads to dependency and leads to people then later on feeling still that they can't manage their affairs. Our aim is to equip them with the skills so that they can next time do a bit more without needing our help.
The range of issues must be so wide. What is the average person doing when they're coming to you? Are they coming to you saying, I am completely confused, I don't know what I'm doing? Or are they coming to you saying, I've got a specific need and I know exactly what it is?
Both is the answer. There's a complete spectrum. We will have clients with a very specific question about, you know, how many years am I allowed to do this for or that for? How long do I have to wait before I can become a British citizen? Or when must I make my tax return? Or how long do I have to plan before I can get married or engaged or bring my partner from another country? Or it may be I have just learned that I have a diagnosis of a very serious disease, life-limiting, and I am all at sea and have no idea where to start, and I appreciate that I will need to make lots of changes and plans and I don't know where to begin. Or I have just had a huge row with my employer, stroke partner, stroke family member, stroke landlord, and have walked out with nothing but the shirt on my back, and I need to start to unpick my life, and everything in between those two extremes.
Do you have to make an appointment?
The assumption will always be that you'd need an appointment. In fact, what we find is that the initial interview is better as a drop-in, because then we can do some exploration of the issues. And usually we find that we will need to ask people to go away and find the answers or find documents. And so we like to reserve the pre-booked appointments, which are the most valuable part of the service, for we like to make the best use of them by having some planning, so that when people come to an appointment, which will be 45 minutes or thereabouts, they're fully equipped so that we can really make as much progress as possible.
If I come in the first time, who am I going to meet?
You will meet, first of all, two receptionists, mostly, who are volunteers, who will capture a certain amount of information about you, which helps us to put some context so that we can ask you the right questions and think about the right things that you would be able to apply for or be eligible for based on your age, your ethnicity, your housing status, your family type, for example. And then you will have a short wait. I think our average waiting time at the moment is about 25 minutes. And you will see what we call an assessor, and you'll see them for about 20 minutes to 40 minutes. And they will explore with you the nature of your problem, trying to go beyond the immediate problem and have a look at what's led up to this, so that we can help you as much as possible to solve things at source or at the root, rather than just putting sticking plaster on the immediate problem. It may be that we will make you a referral after that assessment to a different service somewhere else, or we may make you an appointment, come back and see us again.
The first person you've seen is a receptionist who's a volunteer. Is the second person a volunteer?
Yep, they are a volunteer, all our assessors. Yep, and we have in total 80 volunteers, of whom about 55 are advisors and assessors now.
if I come back then, having had that initial assessment,
yeah.
with luck, you've ascertained the real problem I'm grappling
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
I may conceal that.
Yes, I wouldn't say conceal, but it's understandable that when people walking off the street, they don't know who we are and whether they should trust us and whether we deserve to be trusted, whether we will judge them, whether they will feel foolish, whether they'll feel bad about their problems, whether they'll feel that they've contributed to them. And we're all human and we mostly do contribute to our problems, so that's to be expected. But it's quite common that people will expose some of their issues to us in the first instance to see if we treat them fairly and with respect, and if what we have to say makes sense to them. And it seems as though we know what we're talking about when we consult our database of research. And then often they will be moved to tell us more about the real extent of their worries, understandably, once they've come to trust us and feel that they won't be judged.
And I may not myself know what the issue is that
yes,
I'm tackling.
Yes, that's relatively common. And if you've just had a relationship breakdown, you've just had a major argument with your spouse or your partner and you've walked out in a fit of pique, you may think that your biggest problem is getting access to your car because you needed to get to work. But in fact, we may be concerned about you being able to access your home and your bank account. And you may not have even thought of those things. So it's quite common for us to ask you a lot of questions, which in the first instance you may think, well, why are you asking me that? But actually it soon becomes clear that your difficulties may be wider than you've appreciated. They may not, and let's hope that they're not, but it's our job to explore the fullest possible extent of the vulnerability that you find yourself in so that you can act accordingly.
Presumably, in some instances, the initial assessment is enough to point the way to a solution.
In very many, I think, off the top of my head, it's something like 60% of all of our interventions will be resolved at that point, because the matter is self-contained enough and the person is competent and capable enough. By that, I mean they can see, they can hear, they can read, perhaps they're emotionally together, you know, they're not dissolving in floods of tears, and we can probe with them to what extent they're able to make sense of what we tell them and what we show them on the internet, usually, or sometimes with printouts. And it may be at that initial assessment that the action plan at the end of the interview is the agreement the client will go away and do X, Y, and Z, and see to what extent that works. And then if it doesn't resolve fully, they will return for another bite of the cherry. If they've then moved into the next intensity of intervention where they have an appointment, we're still trying to leave the onus with the client to progress their matter, because it's important to us to empower clients rather than take over their affairs. So as far as possible, we want to agree with them the course of action that they are going to take. But it may be that they're not equipped to, so they don't read, or they have poor eyesight or poor hearing, or they've had a stroke and they're not able to communicate very clearly, or they are so emotionally overwhelmed by their circumstances, they may have just had a diagnosis of a terminal illness, for example, that they are ill-equipped to advocate on their own behalf, not necessarily forever, but right now. And for that category of client, then we would take action on their behalf. And when we take action on their behalf, then the onus moves to us to make progress happen. If you'd had a relationship breakdown and you came in on the first day with the shirt on your back, having slammed the door and walked out, the initial thing we would be trying to sort out would be your access to your home and control over your money. And then you may go away and do a few of those things, and 3 months later you may come back and say, well, we've decided we're going to separate now, the heat of the moment's passed, but what we want to do now is think about how we dissolve the relationship. So who do we need to contact and who do we need to let know, and how do we decide how much of these assets each of us keep and control? And you may, if you're still very together and you're not emotionally destroyed by this breakup, you may come for 4 or 5 of those type of assessments where we move you along a bit in a slightly different area each time. It may be that you're concerned about investments that you made or pensions, or it may be that you want to think again again about your will. You could have a series of assessments in those circumstances. If, on the other hand, you come back to us for an appointment because there's something very complicated that we need to look at in depth and or you have capability needs, then it may be that you would see a generalist advisor, or you may see one of our specialist advisors. And we've got specialist advisors in money advice who will do things like rescheduling repayments to your creditors, or in extreme cases, making applications for debt relief orders or bankruptcy on your behalf. We also currently have specialist disability benefits advisors who will help people to make welfare benefit claims for things like personal independence payments, attendance allowance, carers allowance. So it may be that we make you an appointment with them.
Are they still volunteers?
It's about 2/3 of the specialists are paid and 1/3 are volunteers. And the deciding factor tends to be the likelihood of continuity and the need for continuity, because with the volunteers, the model is that you see whoever's on duty. And that works pretty well most of the time, although we do record in quite some detail case notes on all our clients' affairs that they tell us and that they're happy to share with us. So a subsequent advisor would have access to those case notes. Nonetheless, the relationship needs building and the trust needs building from scratch. So we don't want to make poor use of our resources by having to invest in that time or put the client under additional strain.
Of course, confidentiality is an issue. How private are these meetings?
In the Civic Centre, we have 8 interview rooms, which are completely private. And you're right, confidentiality is very important. And the thing that most people don't realise about the confidentiality duty that we have is that it's the fact of the visit. So in our training, we spend quite a lot of time with volunteers thinking about ways in which this might trip us up. Because if we are a volunteer and we're walking down St. Peter's Street to get our sandwich at lunchtime and we see walking towards us someone who has been in to see us the previous week, and we're a very friendly soul and we make eye contact and break into a big smile and say hello, what we don't know is that that person's abusive partner is not across the road in a car looking and will not say to them later, "Who was that that said hello to you?" Our standing instruction is that we will only meet someone's gaze if they are particularly seeking our gaze in the street. We certainly wouldn't discuss any affairs.
You've talked about money, you've talked about housing, you've talked about benefits, you've talked about coming into the country as an immigrant and having all the issues that follow from that. How do you decide if a person is right for the CAB?
I've spent quite a lot of my time recruiting and training volunteers. The short answer is it's art, not science. And so there is no single right way to be a good advisor. There are lots of right ways, a bit like there are lots of right ways to be a good teacher. You bring to it aspects of yourself that mean that you can make a good relationship with people. But the way that you do that may vary considerably from person to person. So the main things that we look for in volunteers is an openness of mind, an inclination not to judge people, an ability to ask questions. My really shorthand view is that they have to have some benevolence. They have to basically be quite forgiving about mankind and themselves in order to be a good advisor. But you have to be interested in learning. It suits people who are curious, because there's a lot to get to know about people and the law.
Is it very demanding to be a volunteer?
It is very demanding. You know, on a bad day, it can be very draining, because people who are at crisis points in their lives, and not everybody is at crisis. Some of the things that we deal with are quite matter of fact and every day. But we will see people who've been bereaved and people who've had family breakdown and been made redundant and been diagnosed with serious illness. And those things take a time. And when people are stressed and anxious or angry and thwarted and frustrated, you know, the computer says, no, this is the 5th time and I've spent 45 minutes on the phone, and people are not at their best.
And what's your level of support for volunteers when they are in stressful situations?
We do a lot with the training to prepare volunteers to start from first principles that understand that it's not about us, that the client isn't angry because of anything we've done, and that it's not personal, and that we try to help our volunteers to put themselves in the shoes of the person and to empathise with the stress and the frustration that they're feeling. And that goes a long way to helping, because it diffuses the conflict potential. And then we have a supervisor on what we call the desk, who's on duty for the whole time and with whom the volunteer will consult to escalate any concerns that they have and to share. And the beauty of the volunteer pool, the resource and the volunteer team is that they draw strength from each other and comfort from each other in talking, because the duty of confidentiality is that is a duty owed by the organisation. So it's not a breach in the duty for colleagues on duty to discuss a client's affairs, to trying to come up with better solutions.
Do you have enough volunteers?
We can always have more. We're recruiting volunteers at the moment. We involve volunteers in lots of different roles. People will tend to think, oh yes, Citizens Advice, I could go and be an advisor. And they could, and we do want people to come and be advisors and assessors. The training for that's quite lengthy. It takes about a year to 18 months. So we really need people who've got at least 2 years available so that we can make good use of the training investment in having some time at the end where they're serving. But we've got a marketing and publicity volunteer. We've got a research and campaigns volunteer. We'd like a volunteer to help our trainer to pull together the materials and do course bookings for external courses and to maintain training records and help us with our workforce development plan and all the sort of administration of training as well as the delivery of it. Fundraising accounts for probably 60% of my time, and I have some volunteers who help me with that. But yes, there are lots of things that volunteers can do for us and with us.
How much time would a volunteer need to have available?
For the assessor advisor role, we're really looking for 2 days a week, or at least 2 days a week during the active part of training, and 3 half days when they're actually on the road to seeing clients. But for all of the other roles, so reception and marketing and research and administration, 1 day a week is usually sufficient, but it's still a lot.
You yourself, your first contact with Citizens Advice Bureau was as a volunteer.
It was, yeah. I joined as a volunteer and did the training the first time in Chelmsford in 1987, and I served them for about 3 years, and we moved to Wales, and when I was in Wales I couldn't find childcare because I relied on my parents when we were local. And then I'd had my appetite whetted by being an advisor to see the difference that law can make in people's lives, and so I did Open University studies because I'd left school at 16 with no qualifications. So I studied with the Open University, and then I went to University College London and did a law degree and then taught there for 4 years. So it was quite a long time before I came back to Citizens Advice in about 2002, I think, in Epping Forest, when I joined and retrained again as an advisor. Lots of people use volunteering with Citizens Advice as a way into all sorts of careers. We've had people go and become GP surgery receptionists. We've had people go and work on the counter with the post office. We've had people become paralegals. We've had people get training contracts to become solicitors. So it is a very well trod path for people who are coming back into society, who've perhaps been out of the community either with poor health or caring responsibilities for a while, or who just want to change their life in some way, or are new to the area. We've got lots of volunteers who move into the area, and it's a good way for them to get to know people in the community.
Where's most of the money for this? Is it bequests and donations? Or
no, very little. We did get one bequest from the Margaret Pavia Will Trust of £5,000, which is exceptionally valuable because A, I haven't had to spend hours writing a very lengthy application, and B, we can spend that on our core costs, which with most of the grants that we apply for, we can't do. We have to spend it on the project that we're being asked to deliver. Most is grants. So St Albans Fund for the Future have given us £1,000 per year for 5 years. We had to submit an application. The Eastern Legal Support Trust, we do a sponsored walk and they match fund. So we raised £500 and they matched it with another £500. Access to Justice Foundation, we applied for funding to staff our Thursday evening session, which we run so that people who are in employment can get some access to the service. The Hertfordshire Community Foundation administer a number of grants that we've applied to successfully, including the Police and Crime Commissioner, who gave us some money last year to try to help in particular the Asian community and Asian women, but who in the past has helped us with money to help people avoid becoming victims of scams. There was the Rowlandson Trust, Graham Rowlandson Trust, based in Potter's Bar, who were interested in the plight of people with long-term sickness and disability and had heard that people were struggling with making welfare benefit claims. And so we lead a partnership funded £37,500 they give us. And we're in partnership with North Hart Citizens Advice, who we then subcontract for £10,000, and Hartsmere, who we subcontract for another £10,000. To help 100 people with disability welfare benefit claims.
Do you get anything from the local authority?
Oh yes, lots. It's because the local authority, so St Albans District Council, give us, well, there's a number of different pots that all add up to about 130, 140,000. The main grant's about 100.
That's probably quite a large chunk of what you need, isn't it?
Our total budget is 250,000, It's a good platform. And without that, we would be in no position to spend the time.
Despite the squeezes on local authority funding, they're enlightened enough to see that what you're doing is saving society a lot of money.
Absolutely, because we've got the data to prove it. So we can show how many people we helped, what the issues were we helped with, and how much better they were financially as a result, and how much better the council are financially as a result, because of things that you can put a price on, such as evictions avoided and homelessness prevented. Every family that's on the street costs social services in the county a lot of money. So yes, we are exceptionally good value for money. Our figures this year are, for every pound that we spend, we deliver £5 worth of benefit to the person affected. So they're £5 better off for every pound we spend. And I think the average income gain is something like £2,000 per client for the work that we do, helping them to claim things that they're entitled to that they have been struggling with.
We've only scratched the surface. You have so much need that you're facing. Yeah. I mean, if you had more volunteers and more funding, you could open all day, all night.
I joined in 2015 and we didn't have all the outreaches. And only recently this year, with the help of Harpenden Churches and the Town Council in Harpenden, somebody described it as crowdfunding, but it almost was. We were able to prove how much need there was and to cost it and to say how much money it would take to train some volunteers and support them. And we've been able to open two mornings a week in Harpenden. And in the first quarter that we were there, we've seen 70% of the capacity. So we're doing very well. And yes, you're absolutely right. There's lots more need. And if we had the money, we could expand our. In fact, I'm already applying for a partnership with the University of Hertfordshire, for example, for us to provide training and supervision to groups of their students so that we could give advice via web chat, which we do now, but we could do more of it.
We've got to stop, June. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you.
That was June Chapman explaining to me the range of ways in which the Citizens Advice Bureau helps across this district. If you'd like to volunteer with Citizens Advice, there's a special information session on Tuesday the 16th of October between 1pm and 3pm at the Civic Centre. That's the District Council offices next to the arena, of course. They're looking for more trainee advisors and also have opportunities on reception and in various administrative roles. As June said, comprehensive training and support provided. So if you're interested, pop into Citizens Advice at the Civic Centre between 1 and 3pm on Tuesday the 16th of October. Now if you want to contact your local advice centre, don't forget there's a CAB in Central St Albans in the Civic Centre, which is open on Monday through Thursday and on Friday just the morning 10 till 1. Now the other outreach centres are in London Coney, Redbourne, Wheathampstead and Harpenden. June mentioned the Harpenden one is open 10 to 1 on Monday and Thursday, but you can find all the times of the other local outreach centres on the website, citizensadvice.org.uk, and you can put in your location and find the nearest Citizens Advice Bureau to where you live.